What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to talk about some comic books while also being very hot. It is hot out there. It is boiling. So we're going to become a bunch of sleepy boys while we talk about these comic books. Right, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, and what the tough part is, you know, we care about our audio. So some of us have to sweat more, you know, so you don't hear an AC going, you know, God forbid someone should be able to be in a nice environment to do stuff. You know what I mean?
Pete, here's a little, this is a little life hack. If you just slip one little ice cube into your butthole, you'll be fine for the whole recording.
Listen, wow. I'd just like not to pull back the curtain too much, but it was a choice. Either we hear Pete's audio with a hiss of an AC in the background, or we hear the distinctive bloop, bloop of his sweat pouring out of his armpits, because of course we're all shirtless when we tape this podcast. Yeah.
That's the way we do it. I want to be as open and available during this podcast as I possibly can. And that means fully nude, sweating with one or two ice cubes in my butthole.
You're bragging that you got two up there now?
Yeah. That's what you call a cocktail, I guess.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Wow. Yeah. In the winter, I put just a little sharp piece of charcoal in there to keep me warm.
Oh, and if you clench hard enough, that's how you get diamonds. Let's kick it off with our first review. Empire Avengers number 0 from Marvel Comics, written by Al Ewing and art by Pepe Larraz. Now, if you attended or listened to our live show, we had Dan Slott on. Turns out that detended, meaning watched live.
We do take attendance, and if you're late, you will get a demerit.
Oh, boy.
So Al Ewing and Dan Slott and a couple of the editor folks planned out this big cosmic event for the Marvel Universe that is bringing the Kree and Skrull armadas together to attack Earth. Turns out in this issue, there's a bunch of plant folks who are trying to oppose them. They've taken over the blue area of the moon, turned it into the green area of the moon, and they've recruited the Avengers to their side. Spoilers for the end of the issue. Fantastic Four might be on the other side. Oh, so get ready for cosmic civil war.
And that's
I was just going to say, and
that's what Dan Slott was talking about, of like why it's so important to pick up this issue, because that big kind of reveal at the end. There is a lot in this book, which I'm surprised at, but it just... make it the first fucking issue. I mean, 0 issues just don't make any sense to me. It's just, if it's so important, why is it a fucking 0?
I think because of what you said, right? Like, it's setting up a lot of information and exposition into this issue. And what they want to do with the first issue is get, like, right to the action and skip over most of the backstory with the Celestial Madonna and the entire history of the cosmic Marvel Universe and all these things. I'm sure they'll touch on it a little bit, but not in the same depth that they do here. This gives them a chance to sit with the characters, sit with the Avengers, get their takes on things, let you understand it and the stakes of everything that's going on, versus, again, hopefully Empire One is like a balls-to-the-wall action movie.
Well, I tell you what, you know, Pete, before Comic Book Club, never picked up 0 issues. And, you know, I don't know if you need to, because this is a lot. And then the first issue is going to be all action. So it's kind of like, do you need to know all this shit? It's sure, it's nice. It makes it richer. But it's a lot to kind of before a big event.
So let me see if I got this straight. You have only been picking up 0 issues for 14 years out of your lifetime.
That's right. Only because you guys make me. Otherwise, I would never do it.
Pete, that's almost 10% of your life. That's crazy. Well, let me throw this out to you, Pete. A movie trailer is sort of the 0 issue to a movie, and you fucking love those.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You got me there.
That all said, what did you think about this book? What's your take on this event? Justin?
I like it, especially I like this issue a lot. It gets into some historical stuff, and you get the characters. It feels like a different type event than so many other Marvel events, where there's like our Avengers feel like they're a little bit on the sidelines of the event now, and they're trying to find their entry point. And so we get to it's less just obvious how you don't see the scaffolding as much as it's coming together, and I appreciate that.
Pete?
I was happy there was some action in this because a lot of times Zero Issues are just a lot of talky shit. But then it's just kind of also like they go out of their way to kind of introduce Sword Guy, and it looks like Sword Guy was born in the kind of new Sex Island world. So that I was like all kind of excited, but then he's like, looked like he was birthed on the X-Men Sex Island. So that kind of undercut it a little bit for me.
We know what you mean by Sex Island.
Okay. Well,
unless Pete
Epstein,
actually did you
right?
did you move
about
to
Epstein?
Jeffrey Epstein?
No.
Did you move to a sex island, Pete? Is that the island you're referencing, or are you talking about the X-Men books?
I'm talking about the X-Men books. Yeah. No. I don't think Philadelphia is known as Sex Island, but I appreciate what you're going for.
I mean, it is the city of brotherly love, so draw your own conclusions there, I guess.
And in the state of Pennsylvania, it is one of those sexiest places.
This is very true.
Okay.
I gotta tell you, I feel like I'll probably have a different opinion once we get to the first issue. But for me, in terms of ramping up to this event, the Zero issue is actually probably important. And the reason is that the entire issue, I'm reading it being like, okay, these plant people are evil though, right? Like the entire setup is the Avengers are like, something weird is happening. Things are getting really bad. There's an emergency. We need to go to the moon. Something's weird here. There are monsters. And then a weird dude shows up and is like, all is well. And everybody's like, everything is fine. And finally, Carol Danvers, three quarters way through the book, is like, hey, remember in that incoming book that came out like a year ago when some Kree and Skrull came out and they were teamed up and they were terrified and they burst into plants? That was pretty awful, right? And Tony Stark is like, you know what? It wasn't awful. And she's like, I think you're right. It wasn't awful. And then they kind of move on from there, which felt to me is like, maybe they planned one thing when they wrote incoming and they have a different thing now that they're actually up to Empire. And so they're sort of reconciling those two ideas. But as a reader, spending the entire issue by the end being like, oh, okay, the plant people are not evil. Now I can get into Empire and be like, all right, I understand what the story is, because it was very weird to me the entire time I was reading this book.
Well, wait, it is so interesting you understand? Because I read this whole thing twice, and I still don't understand what the fuck's happening.
Yeah, I think I understand what's happening. Okay. There's these... I mean, this is, again, like, this was set up in Incoming, and there was another issue that I feel like they delved into this a little deeper. Basically, like, millennia ago, there was this whole contest that the Skrulls held between the Kree and, I guess they're called the Karate, who are the plant people. And the Kree were like, yes, strength is the ruler. That's the thing. We need to win this contest by killing everybody. And the Karate won because they were like, we're going to plant some plants. No. Karate do not know karate. Planted some plants. And so they proved that peace was the most important thing. And that's how they ended up winning the contest. So they're this very peaceful group of people, this very peaceful race. The Kree is not. That's the conflict there.
Okay.
What were you going to say about Justin?
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, I would like to say, and I hope the people at home are thirsty, that the art alone is worth picking this book up.
Wow. Yes, the art is very good.
Did you have anything?
I forgot what I was going to say early because you were...
Maybe about the plant people or something?
Oh, I didn't get it. I was saying I didn't understand what was happening. Maybe you had some...
Yes. Here's what I was going to say. It's interesting now because of the way that everything in the last few years in comics has felt so compressed, where there's multiple events always being set up or finishing or whatever across the lines. And the way that COVID has affected the publishing cycle, now it's all out of whack a little bit. And so I feel like... the way that DC has structured their last year, sort of pre-COVID, where everything's happening at once and everyone just talks about it, is actually working a little bit in their favor now, where it's like, oh, everything was like sort of a mess, so that's the way we're going. And it feels like Marvel's was sort of constructed in this very domino effect way, And now they're dealing with the repercussions of that because of the 2 or 3 month delay we had.
Ooh. Yeah, I feel like I was more sold on it hearing Dan Slott talk about it on our show than I was necessarily reading this issue. Though I do think Al Ewing, great writer, Pepe Larraz, fantastic artist. So very well done issue. But I'm personally still kind of holding back until we get into issue one to be fully on board with this event, personally.
That makes sense. That's when the story starts. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Wait for it to start and then get on board. Yeah, that's a smart way to do it.
Pete, when you think about it, every issue that happens before the issue you're currently reading is a zero issue.
Oh, shit. Don't try to say shit like that.
Batman number 93 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Gillam March and Javier Fernandez. This is bringing to a close the big designer storyline that has pitted a bunch of assassins and classic villains against Batman. Turns out he's going up against the designer here, the person who has been behind everything. Huge spoiler here at the end. 3, 2, 1. Turns out the designer is dead. He's, in fact, a puppet of the Joker. This was, in fact, all a plan of the Joker, who never meant to go with the designer's plan at all. And, in fact, it's kicking off the Joker War, and it ends with the Joker basically winning and taking Bruce Wayne's fortune. This is great. This is such a well-constructed storyline.
Unfucking believable, because it was so weird how like Joker was like, oh yeah, designer's doing his thing, okay, I'm just gonna wait in the cut. And I'm like, wait, that's not Joker's style. Like the fact that he's taking a back seat to all this stuff, because they kept being like, oh, also the Joker's here, also Batman, don't forget about the Joker. So like, this was such an amazing payoff, and I also really love the punchline stuff. I'm very excited to see where this goes from here. This is continues to be an amazing issue, and it's impressive to see James Tynion like take Batman and run with it.
Go ahead, there were some wicked fireworks going off in my house. not at my house, but near my house. I know this is usually what Pete's thing to say, but the art in these issues has been so good. The way that it jumps from sort of two different styles between the Batman focused stuff and then the Harley.
Is there another
way
that you could say that, Justin, or no?
No, I only say things one way.
Okay, all right. Just wondering.
Why is there another way you might throw it out there?
I would say the art alone is worth picking this up.
Oh, interesting.
Did you know you say that a lot, or did you not know until the Patreon Slack made a drinking game about it?
I did, but when someone calls you out on your shit, you're like, okay, all right, I guess I'm not getting away with that anymore.
From a writing perspective, I really love how...
I just wanted to mention that it's the same thing in my day job.
Wow, good. I am a classically trained actor. From a writing perspective, I love how James does a good job of telling a very complex story sort of cleanly and moving through the beats so that you don't get caught up on all the details. Like, because there's just so much going on in this, and the fact that it's all a feint and Joker's behind it, like, it was all so carefully set up, like, really great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really impressive, and I'm glad that you pointed out the details, because as a line producer, you're very detail-oriented, so it's impressive to see you.
I am not a line producer. For the 19th time, not a line. I'm a creative in most of my jobs.
Okay. Oh, my bad. Wow. Sorry.
Rude to line producers, dude, which, of course, you are one.
Yeah, yes. Line producers union. No, line producers. The job. That job is managing the budget. It's a very powerful position. Definitely something like that. But I'm not a money person.
Right. One last note that I want to say about this issue that I liked in terms of holding back on things. There's been a ton of fights with Deathstroke, between Deathstroke and Batman throughout this whole arc, and Deathstroke keeps getting bested by Batman. I love the fact that Deathstroke was holding back the entire time, and finally this issue, we get to see him just jump out and stab Batman right through the leg.
Oh, like, that was awful.
Deathstroke should be the deadliest fighter in the DC universe, and too many times they hold back on that for the reason of storytelling, and it felt so purposeful here to have this last reveal of Deathstroke getting the better of Batman. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Sex Criminals number 29 from Image Comics by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. It is finally all coming to an end here. This is an issue picking up on... dude, are you, this title is great, or this title is ending?
Yeah, it's coming to an end.
Pete, this is not a title. Pete can't handle this stuff. He doesn't like sex or criminals.
Right. That's true. Man, this issue is fantastic. This is picking up on, I've read so many issues of this book and I cannot remember their names, but Dude's girlfriend ended up in a huge explosion that destroyed the Quiet, the thing that they could enter in order to access their sex powers. And he spends the entire issue destroying the house of the main dude who has ruined their lives. And it's so precise and careful throughout, so well laid out, both from Fraction and Zdarsky. This issue is awesome.
I really liked it because I could read most of it in public. Then, of course, we had the masturbation stuff. I was like, fucking, of course. But I love the way they went through and destroyed that, especially the way he put the watches on his feet. Like, just so fun for most of this comic, and, you know, then whatever. But this so far is my favorite issue of the run.
Wow, what a weird way to end your review, your sort of mostly negative review. Would you be interested in a comic called No Sex Punishers? Because I'm working on it. The fact that, I mean, this comic, the pacing on it has been wildly different over the entire run. And I feel like this issue felt really fast. And this whole, like, the final arc has been moving so much more fast, much more quickly than the rest of the run. And I really like this a lot because to see the characters isolated in this way, there's some fun in here as well as some heartfelt moments where the characters are sort of finding themselves in some way and falling apart in other ways was really cool. It's also funny, Chip Zdarsky going from the artist on this book to now such a force as a writer, it's funny to see him as the artist on this book, I guess.
Yeah, just, I mean, it's clearly a collaboration. Like, they don't delineate who does what or anything like that. But I definitely get what you're saying, because he is writing these awesome, very serious storylines on Daredevil and other things that he started as the funny guy doing funny art for Sex Criminals, and it is built to this incredible career. The other thing that I wanted to say about this book is I felt like this could have been the last issue, and that would have been okay to me. Like, to spoil the last two words in it, it's him, as Pete was mentioning, dude, we finally link back to why he got arrested, why he was in jail. He's in jail. He's masturbating, thinking about his girlfriend. She shows up in ghostly form, and she leans in and whispers, "Honey, I'm coming." And to me, that's great. Like, that is a perfect way of ending this book. I know there's another issue after this, but if it had ended here, that would have been fine with me.
I agree. Like, it definitely, it makes me curious to what the next couple issues are going to be.
Yeah. Next one to talk about, Sleeping Beauty is number one from IDW, based on the novel by Stephen King and Owen King, adapted by Rio Ewers, art by Allison Sampson. I got to admit, I haven't read the novel this is based on, but it's weird reading something about a viral pandemic that puts people to sleep right now. But what did you think about this book?
Fun. The art's really great, and it had like this dreamlike quality. So I'm very curious. I think it fits the book really well. But since I haven't read the novel, I don't know what's happening quite yet. With a lot of what the character, who the characters are and what they're doing. Cause I think we get the premise pretty well here, and it's really interesting, but it's very hard to think about what the characters are.
I'm really impressed with this book. I think it's very interesting. The idea, I tell you right now, I wish I could be sleeping through this pandemic. That would be a lot more preferable, but, it's very cool the way they're kind of revealing what's happening and what's going on. Yeah, I was real impressed with the creativity of the page work and the paneling. A lot of amazing, like, facial stuff going on. Yeah, and it's kind of, like Zalbin said, it's extra creepy because it's happening right now. But, yeah, very creative, very cool. Definitely worth checking out for sure.
Yeah, like you guys are saying, I had a little trouble following the story, but the art by Alison Sampson is gorgeous. It feels like... somebody, not to take her off this title, but somebody should snap her up for like the Dreaming title or something like that over on the Sandman line, because she'd fit in perfectly.
Because you think she can only draw sleep stuff.
Yeah, that's fucked up, Zalbin.
She should jump on. She should jump on Bananas and Pajamas real quick.
1-800-MATTRESS. Leave off the last ask for savings. She should draw that. Yep, any of that stuff, I think, would be fine. But nothing else. Okay, Thor number 5 from Marvel Comics, written by Donny Cates and art by Nick Klein. This is continuing the storyline of Thor as the Herald of Galactus. They are trying to stop a black storm that is going to eat up the entire universe. Meanwhile, all of Asgard is just waiting on tenterhooks, trying to figure out what's going to happen. And we get some big revelations this issue that, in classic Donny Cates fashion, he is completely redefining the mythology of the Marvel Universe once again. What'd you think about this one?
I feel like so much of what Donnie does, and a lot of sort of good writers now, is really like plumbing the depths of the characters or the title they're on, the universe in general, and pulling out something they're like, ooh, I want to just sort of explore this. And we get some great Galactus stuff in this issue where we use Galactus's past and sort of find ways to spin it and combine it with Thor and have Thor have some fucked up stuff happen to him that spins out of his history as well. And it's fun. It feels important while at the same time new.
Yeah, I was impressed. The art is amazing. Really cool storytelling. And I was happy that it wasn't just like what looks like negative Thor, like there was more going on. And it was fun that like the bad guy counterpoint was like him, you know. I really liked the kind of like last page reveal, and the way that was kind of paced out really felt as big as it seemed. I thought it was really impressive.
Every issue I read of this book, my impression at the end is, oh man, why isn't there more of this? You know, it goes so quickly, but it only goes so quickly because I just page through it just voraciously as I'm reading every single thing, because all of the character stuff is good. All of the action is gorgeously rendered by Nick Klein throughout, and it's just not enough. It's something that, like, I always at the end kind of think like, oh, does that mean it went too quickly? And I think actually what it means is it's such an engaging read. I want more of it, and I want the next issue right now.
Do you often finish up something, Alex, and you're like, did I enjoy that?
Yes. Actually.
Do I like this? I mean, I feel like we're so inundated with content across the board. So you're watching something, you're like, is this nice? Or am I just awake right now?
I mean, 100%, particularly with TV shows, every single time I do like a mental check-in of, did I enjoy this, or am I analyzing this for work and to talk about later? Am I liking this because I think I'm supposed to what is going on in my brain? So,
well, just to be clear, were you talking about your day job just then?
I was talking about my day
job. Nice, great. That's great. Glad we're bleeding that into all of our lives.
Thor 5 is great. Definitely pick that up. Rogue Planet number 2 from Oni Press, written by Cullen Bunn and illustrated by Andy McDonald. This is a horror title set in space. Bunch of regular dudes go to a planet and encounter some weird, terrible things. Things only get more terrible and more bloody this issue. In particular, Andy McDonald's art is so horrifying throughout, and the pace of it is so good. I think we talked about this with the first issue, but space horror with Alien is kind of overdone a little bit, but this feels fresh and new and terrifying in exactly the right way.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the way that it has that fun, nostalgic reference to Alien while also not at all like ripping it off. It does bring in so many different, especially this issue. I feel like the first two, the last issue and this one, like reading them together would be, it would help this book a lot because it feels like the premise is set, the trap is set in the first issue, and this is like, oh, it's actually much different. There's all these different factors coming together, and it's tense and exciting. It's great.
Yeah, it's very tense. And kind of like after the last issue, when I saw the kind of like human trees of entrails that is kind of like stretched upward, I was like, why are you just being so casually around this gross monstrosities? And this issue picks up and they're even more casual and the tension is very high and it's driving me insane.
It's great. Definitely pick this up, particularly if you want a good horror read. Once in Future, number 8 from Boom Studios, written by Kieran Gillen and illustrated by Dan Mora. Pete, you love this title. This is the second arc. After setting up that everybody from Camelot is evil and trying to destroy England, essentially, now we get Beowulf attacking our heroes, who's just a regular dude who fights monsters, and his grandma, who also fights monsters. Pete, what did you like about this issue?
This continues to be one of my favorite things to read right now. I get so excited when this is in my stack. And it continues to deliver. And the grandma back and forth is so amazing because you have this grandma who's had so many adventures and lived such an amazing life that all this insanity is kind of like her Tuesday. So it's just fun to her being over everything. And then the son kind of experiencing it for the first time, which is kind of like us, the reader, which is really great. And just the fun back and forth and the whole play they kind of do on this of like the when you apologize and the callback, just so much fun, amazing lore, art's unfreaking believable, and yes, it is worth picking it up alone.
Pete, let me ask you, did you read the zero issue of this book, which is the poem Beowulf?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I think you'd enjoy it because it really sets up a lot of this stuff here.
And I just want to check, did you mean to say it's worth picking up this book alone, or did you mean for the art alone?
Art alone, just to be clear.
No, you have to buy this book alone. This is private journey.
Yeah. Just tell somebody, listen, I need a moment alone to buy this book because it's really phenomenal.
Well, technically, I mean, in this day and age, only one person should go into the store at a time to really be safe because of COVID-19. Right, Pete?
Yeah, ooh, don't say it all together. It out. Yeah.
COVID? Yeah, it's like Beetlejuice.
Yeah. I feel like you're being our dad and you don't want to say the word, so you're spelling it out so we don't know what you're talking about.
COVID, yeah, I can spell
Dan,
that.
Dan. This book is great, and Dan Mora's art is superb throughout. This we've talked about this almost every issue, but it just feels like Kieran Gillen write a big budget, high concept action movie, and it's so much fun.
Yeah, please turn this into an unbelievable movie soon.
Or TV series. I love how in this issue the characters are like, well, we don't know what to do now. This is the beginning of an arc. and then the story unfolds. It's great.
It's good. Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti, art by Amanda Connor. Based on the names alone, I think you know what you're getting into here with this book. This is Harley Quinn in Gotham, mixing it up with the Birds of Prey. In this issue in particular, she is gunning directly for Joker. And because it's Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti, it's picking up directly on their Harley Quinn run. It's naughty. It's rude. There's gross, ridiculous jokes throughout. It's exactly what you'd expect, and it's such a blast to read, plus Amanda Connor's art, which is reliably awesome, as always.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is a fun book. It is, like, exactly what you'd expect, and the art's fantastic. I think that is sort of worth, it's like what if you were to have a value on the book, like it would be worth it for the art by itself. You know what I mean?
Oh, nice.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I appreciate how you're wording it.
Nice. It is interesting. I feel like there's so much, there's almost too much going on in this book. Like, I would rather have it just winnowed down to some of the more specific, like Harley, Joker, or Harley and the other sort of Birds of Prey-esque team that has come together. But it is, it's still very fun. It's like a carnival.
Yeah, this is really fun, and I love how they kind of get Harley's voice in this. I love this version of Harley Quinn. She's a lot smarter than people give her credit for, which is fantastic. I love the kind of way she dodges, and the whole, like, just kind of like hamster kind of deal is hysterical. This is Bieber. Really, yeah. It's just really a lot of fun and really drawn well. It's a great comic.
It's funny that you said it was a hamster because there are like 1 million beaver jokes in this book.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe you didn't get them, Pete. Or you're more of a sort of a hamster in the butt kind of a thing.
Oh, God. Why?
They're like a Richard Dale, Richard Gere Hollywood rumor.
Oh, my God.
Pete has a podcast called Fifth Gear, which explores that every week. Dr. Navarro, number 3 from Valiant Comics, written by Alejandro Arboda and art by Jim Tao. This is the issue that I think we've been waiting for since the first one.
Yes.
This is about a dude travels from another dimension, meets up with his younger self. They team up to stop an evil guy. Every issue we've talked about so far, all 2 of them, I guess, we've talked about, okay, when is it going to turn out that Dr. Tomorrow is actually evil? When are we going to find out that Dr. Tomorrow is actually evil? Spoiler, this issue we find out that Dr. Tomorrow is actually evil. And it feels like a huge relief to read this because it feels like we can finally get to what this book has been trying to do the entire time.
Yes, I agree. I wish we'd gotten a little earlier, but I do give them credit in the book for as soon as we get past that moment,
yeah,
they amp it up we and it's like, moment. Oh, it's actually a whole nother thing. Yeah. So I think it felt a little delayed, but I think they paid it off.
Yeah, they paid it off and made it worth it in a fun way. Really fun art. I love the kind of style of it. I really think it fits this comic well. Yeah, it's kind of been a slow build, but really pays off well. A lot of great action in this issue. This is a great kind of like culmination of everything. Culmination.
Let's move on to what I know Pete is very excited about. Dead Body Road, Bad Blood, number 1 from Image Comics, written by Justin Jordan, art by Benjamin Tiasma. This is picking up on the Dead Body Road series that came out from Image Comics a while ago. In this one, we have a badass bartender who takes the pain to a couple of dudes. Pete,
yeah,
over
this,
to you.
This is great. I love the shading in this to kind of like set up the different themes and the kind of the different stories. Really amazing. The bartender is just such a badass, has an unbelievable last panel. I cannot wait for this to get rolling because the action and the storytelling are just so insane. This is going to be a great book, and I'm very excited to get into it.
This felt like right over the plate for Pete. It's like a Punisher, small town Punisher vibe to me.
Sure.
Just a small town Punisher.
Living in
all right, let's not. Oh, man. Come on, man.
Drinking in a midnight bar, not going out of the bar. This reminded me of what it was like to be in a bar, and I missed that.
Man, I cannot wait to get back into a bar and order a drink. It's going to feel so great.
So I'll tell you, I don't specifically remember the first Dead Body Road. I vaguely remember, and I like Justin Jordan, but I vaguely remember reading it and it being like, this is Justin Jordan trying to do Criminal, you know? Mm. But this one, I liked quite a bit. I think you can jump right into this. You don't need to know anything prior about the series. But like you said, it's just like good old honky-tonk revenge story. The art is great from Benjamin Tiesma. It's brutal. It's good.
Yeah, I
enjoyed this.
Agree.
Yeah.
Next one to talk about, Immortal Hulk, number 34 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing and guest artist
Jesus, what just happened to you?
Do you know what it is? I panicked about his last name.
And then you gave up halfway through his first name. Please take that again. Don't. Butch does not deserves a little bit more respect than that.
All right, we're going to get a second take on this, so let's cut, let's stop down. Everybody, let's go back to one, and Alex, take it away in your own time.
Bitch juice. Oh, Jesus.
You fucking asshole.
Oh, my God. Okay, let's start. We're out of time. We're going to have to go with that. Cut it, print it. Let's move on.
I'm so sorry. This is an issue.
Please say his name correctly just one fucking time.
You say his name. How do you pronounce his name, Pete?
Just say his first name.
Butch.
Geis.
Great. So this is an issue. We kind of teased that the leader has come back into continuity.
Again,
showing
again
what's been going on with him, not just in the time we've been missing him, but literally the entirety of Marvel continuity through the leader, how it ties into the overall Green Door thing that Al Ewing has been building throughout Immortal Hulk. God, this issue, every issue of this is so good. I love the leader. I love his take on the leader.
You
I love the way that
the
he
leader.
Brings. What?
You remind me of the leader.
Thank you so much. This man, I know I've said this about a bunch of issues already, but like, I love this issue because he hits it in all this continuity and makes it work for the story that he's telling in the right way. And it's beyond impressive.
Agree. Do you like this issue really positions the leader as like the antithesis of the Hulk in such a smart way. And it's great. This run of Immortal Hulk is the best comics I think they've come out in the last like 3 or 4 years.
It's definitely going to be a live on as a legendary run. And Zalbin, how's it feel to have your forehead on a comic book? Were you excited about that?
Holy Jesus shit! Christ. He's coming for
wow.
it.
Wow! Who's drinking the bitch juice now, oh. Pete? Jesus Christ! Yeah, this is great. Pick it up. Transformers the Terminator number 2 from Dark Horse Comics and IDW, story by David Marriott, Tom Waltz, John Barber, written by David Marriott and John Barber, art by Alex Milne. This is exactly what you'd expect. It's actually, you know what? I gotta be honest. This is not exactly what I expected.
Yeah,
this is like
better.
This is a little bit disagree, but I'm curious to hear your take on it.
Well, I was really impressed because I was like, all right, Transformers versus the Terminator, that sounds played out. But I really liked how this started. And, you know, we kind of have this classic, you know, Megatron versus Optimus Prime moment. And then kind of like the Terminator jumps in early. It wasn't like this thing where it built up and then kind of like the last page, it was like, oh, the Terminator's here. How's this going to work? I loved it. It was like right out of the box, Terminator comes out shooting, and then it kind of moves forward from there. It was great to see some classic like Razorbeak, Soundwave kind of stuff. I was really impressed with the action of this. I'm not the biggest like Terminator head, but this kind of really got me nostalgic and excited for this series. I really thought the art and the storytelling really pushed this over the top and made it a solid book.
Don't you think it'd be weird if Optimus Prime transformed into a truck and was like, get inside me?
Well, that's the whole point of that joke. I mean, honestly, I'd be honored because fucking Optimus Prime is a hell of a leader, hell of a motivational speaker as well, as we saw in this comic.
I thought you were going to say, hell of a leader, hell of a motor vehicle. He's great on all fronts. Great tires, full tank of gas.
It's funny. I think you and I probably have opposite takes on this, Pete, because I do like Terminator more than Transformers.
Ah.
And I feel like Terminator is underserved by this book. Like, this is a Transformers book. And also the Terminator is there.
Right.
And by the end, they're attacking Cyberdyne Industries, which is like, fine. But it just feels like if you're going to play with the Terminator and, that's all about dark futures and it's about fate and it's about like robots taking Dark over fate. Humanity, and you have a bunch of giant robots there, and nobody is trying to take them over, that feels like a weird missed opportunity to me.
No, I feel like it might get there, but the thing is, to me, it's like Terminator is like this big. Transformers are so huge. Like, that, to me, should be the story. It should be Transformers, a little Terminator. So I think they got the formula right, but you're, you know, kind of reversed on yours, so that's why you feel that way.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, there we go. Let's move on to 7 Days, number 7 from Lion Forge, written by Gail Simone and pencils by Jose Luis. This is the last issue of the title, about a world that has 7 days before it's going to be destroyed. Bunch of superheroes are taking the final fight. As usual, Gail Simone draws great characters and... sets the stakes.
Great character.
Yeah, she draws, she creates characters that are very well defined. And the stakes are incredibly high throughout. And even though I wasn't totally familiar with this title, I was still drawn into this issue.
Oh, a lot of drawing coming from Alan.
Yeah. You love that
word. You took
it
away from me, so I needed to bring it back.
Let me illustrate my opinions on this book. I thought this was fun. Gail Simone is such a great writer. I think she gets us inside these characters' head and is able to tell a story with characters that, like, you know, they don't have a ton of continuity building up to this story, but they feel very familiar. And I hadn't read any issue before this, and to dive in here, it still felt like a great story, and I like where it landed.
Cool. Pete? Pete?
Yeah. What's up?
Think of this book?
It's weird. Your video didn't freeze. It seems like your brain froze.
No, yeah. All of a sudden, you guys stopped talking for a second, and then all of a sudden, it came back on. So I apologize.
A lot of times,
right, because I had said my opinion, and then Justin said his opinion. So we were waiting for your opinion.
Yeah, well, nothing froze, Pete. We were just waiting for you to speak.
Oh, that's weird, because you guys were like, Justin was talking, and all of a sudden the cut out, like froze for a second, and then you guys were like, P?
We don't need to talk about this on the podcast.
All right, well, yeah, so my internet sucks. But yeah, I also, this is the first time I'm picking this up, was very kind of impressed with how quickly I was able to kind of figure out what's going on. A lot of cool characters, interesting designs. I like their wants. I feel like this is a really cool book, and I'm going to kind of go back and read more.
Die number 11 from Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen as well, and art by Stephanie Haas. This takes place in a world that is inside of an RPG game, essentially. A bunch of folks have been sucked into it, fulfilled their roles. Some of them want to leave, some of them don't. What'd you think about this one, Justin?
I like this book a lot. I've talked a lot on this and other podcasts about how I feel that I'm not in characters' heads as much, specifically like the X-Men books, characters in the X-Men books. And in this book, you're riding right alongside the characters, and I think that feels great. It's a open world story. It feels like this comic could end in 2 issues or like 500. And that feels like there's so much potential here. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think the art is just fantastic. It's almost got like a painting quality to it, which I really appreciate. I feel like this is a great issue. Like Justin said, we're getting a lot of kind of like very important story and like what's happening and how people are feeling about it. Some fun reveals, and love the way it kind of ends to kind of set things up going forward. I did not see that coming, and I'm impressed by it.
Yeah, one of the smartest choices they've made with this title is not limiting it to D&D, but instead opening it up to the idea of stories in general. So we've gotten things like beyond D&D, it's also Vampire the Masquerade. And as we find out this issue, it also has like a War of the Worlds style RPG that's stuck onto it. And to your point, Justin, that really makes it a very unlimited concept, which is very cool. Batman the Smile Killer, number 1 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire and art by Andrea Sorrentino. I did not know what to expect for this. Honestly, I thought maybe we had already reviewed this book because I think Jeff Lemire wrote a Joker book that also came out through Black Label. This is a story of Batman. Is he crazy? Is he not? Yeah. Is he real? Is he not? Which we've read a million times, but this felt fresh and new and terrifying in a way that I hadn't read before. So, I loved it.
So scary. The cover with the fucking creepy kid on it. I was like, oh no, I'm not going to like this. This is so fucked up. Yeah, this is like too dark for me in a way that it's almost unenjoyable because it's like, I'm so attached to this character and this world, and I've spent so many years with Batman and Gotham and all these people. So for it to be all made up.
You guys were roommates for a while, right? You and Batman?
Yeah.
At Juilliard.
Yeah, Juilliard. Robin Williams was there, and it was great. But I think that it was one of those things where, like, to make it all a lie is just too much for me to kind of handle. And but man, Jeff Lemire is such an amazing writer. This does feel fresh, but it's so creepy and twisted that I don't want to read it as I'm reading it. But it's so good, I keep reading.
Wow, what a twisted situation you're in, Pete. Yeah. I think the standout here is the Andrea Sorrentino art. Like, that's what elevates this concept that, to your point, we've seen a few times before. This art really takes it to the next level.
Iron Man 2020, number 4 from Marvel Comics, written by Dan Slott and Christos Gage, art by Pete Woods. We talked about this quite a bit on our live show, but Tony Stark has thought he is an AI, or at least he is a copy of Tony Stark, living in a Tony Stark-style body. He has been leading a robot revolution against his brother, Arno Stark. Big revelations throughout this issue that bring together tons of things throughout Dan Slott's Iron Man run. How'd you feel about this one?
This is the issue that I think really crystallized everything that's happening here and made me really look forward to the what's going to happen down the road. Like, I think we get Arno Stark here becoming the villain that we wanted and Tony Stark coming back to becoming the hero. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the Herbie character that's kind of a fucked up Wally, which is fun, although I didn't appreciate his cans joke. I like when Dan Slott's having fun on books. It's just weird that Dan Slott's always wanted an Iron Man book and Iron Man's not in it. So that's a little weird. But I think Dan Slott's a great writer and it's nice to see him having fun.
I agree with Justin about this one. I enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to the next one. Next up, Wicked Things number 2 from Boom Box, created and written by John Allison and art by Max Saron. This is about a teen detective who's about to age out of being a teen detective. She goes to a detective convention / award show to receive potentially an award that instead gets framed for murder. She deals with the repercussions this issue, and This book is just so much fun. It's very silly, but the stakes are still there at the same time. The concept is so clear. I love it. Like, this is definitely rocketed to the top of my stack very quickly. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. What do you guys think about it?
I got to say, after reading the first one, I wasn't as impressed as you were, Salvin, but this issue really won me over. I'm really on board now. At first I was like, there's, you know, the action is not, there's a lot of talking or whatever, but I'm really impressed with the character work and the storytelling and the kind of how this is all going to unfold. And I also like that, one kind of like lady who's in charge, who seems mean, but she really knows her stuff. I'm now all on board with this book. It really won me over. An amazing art.
Yeah, I like it a lot, too. It feels really original. If you're a fan of something like Scott Pilgrim, it feels like sort of in line with that, with a little bit more of a sort of darker take underneath or more stakes, like really fun.
Next up, That Texas Blood, number 1 from Image Comics by Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips. This is basically criminal, but in Texas. is, I think, the way to put it, right?
Well, I mean, yes, that's a little reductive, I think, because sure. I actually loved this title. Like, I think both the writing and art are fantastic. It yes. felt like very small town situations, a lot of fun choices with the way that the police officer's wife is on his walkie all day. And
yeah.
there's a lot of great stuff in here, some good horror reveals. Like, I love this book. One of my favorites of the week.
Yeah, this was, I've thought like, oh, okay, you know, maybe criminal or something, but more Texas style. And like, but I was really impressed because it kind of seems low stakes, small town stuff, but really builds out and really kind of by the end, you're like, holy shit, what is this book even about? So yeah, I'm really impressed with this issue. Like, it does such a great job of establishing the world, establishing the characters, and moving it forward in like a creepy but cool way. A lot of really interesting characters. Yeah, I was really impressed by this.
I mean, to be clear, I'm saying comparing it to Criminal as a compliment. Like, that is a high watermark of comics, and I think art-wise and character-wise, it really comes to meet that very well. Yeah. And to your point, it's focusing on a sheriff, it's focusing on a cop instead of the criminal element, but it still has that very slow, careful character dive that's going on, as well as this gorgeous art. Good stuff. And it seems like it's going to be an ongoing series, which I was kind of surprised about.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that either. And I believe Jacob Phillips is Sean Phillips' son, the artist on Criminal.
Whoa.
There you go. Well, you'll never be as good as your daddy, Jacob.
Oh, come on. Don't say shit. Like, what the fuck? Up. Why would you do that?
No, maybe he will be. I don't know. Maybe he will be.
You know what? Sorry, I can't wait to yell at your fucking son, dude. What the fuck?
Wow. Sorry, man.
I had too much of that bitch juice today, if you know what
I mean. I guess so.
Captain America, Marvel Snapshots, number one from Marvel, written by Mark Russell and art by Ramon Perez. This is part of Alex Ross's line spinning off of Marvel's. This is a story focusing on a kid who ends up as kind of collateral damage to one of Captain America's storylines. Off of that, he ends up getting recruited by AIM. And what happens next? I'm sure you'll want to talk about this a lot, Justin, but as usual, just Mark Russell knocks the story out of the park.
Such a good issue. God, it stands alone. Like, Captain America is not the focus of the book by any means, and just sort of pops up a couple times to do some heroic things, I guess. But the character, the main character of this book is just so well done, and it really, like, I big up Mark Russell a lot because of his ability to write stories that feel very present in our modern world and society, and sort of criticize a little bit what's happening while also just telling a good story. And this issue does that just so well. And Ramon Perez's art, always fantastic. Great here, too.
Yeah, I really loved how touching this was, especially the way this ends. And, you know, talking about, like, where heroes are needed and where focus needs to be, and just really powerful, I think nicely done. And just the two of them kind of sitting down, looking over the shoulder shot at the end was very nice. I really liked what this comic was saying.
Yeah, this is great. Definitely pick it up. Next up, Rick and Morty presents Council of Ricks, number one from Oni Press, written by Jake Goldman, illustrated by Mark Ellerby with Phil Murphy. This is, if you've watched Rick and Morty, you know about the Council of Ricks, which is a bunch of Ricks from every part of the multiverse, all living and working together. This seems like sort of a prequel to that, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But like the first Rick and Morty Presents that we read, I think this very cleverly captures the tone of the show.
I think it does a better job in this issue than the last one of capturing it. Really felt like this was straight out of the show. Really fun and very cool storytelling. Very interesting kind of twists and turns. I loved all the random shit, and the shooting the robot in the beginning was so great. I really like this book. A lot of fun bits here. Really smart, fun reveals, and of course those goddamn what are they, like, hidden eye pictures or whatever those fucking things were. Magic eye posters.
Magic
eye. Oh man, as a kid, like, when I finally figured out how to fucking do that, it was like, you know, things really opened up. So it was kind of fun.
Things really opened up in your life?
Yeah. Yeah. Once you kind of got past that magic eye thing, you know, it's like, okay, if you really work on things and focus, you know, you can get stuff done.
So you consider that sort of your puberty?
Yep. Yeah.
They do that on job interviews, right, Pete?
They should.
Hey, last question before we give you the job. Yeah. Just take a look at this magic eye. What do you see here?
I think, is Council of Ricks a direct crib from Hickman's Council of Reeds?
No. Maybe?
I don't think
no.
so.
No? I think Council of Reeds predates it.
Council of Ricks or Council of Reeds?
Reeds. I think Reeds predates Ricks.
That's what I'm saying. So Council of Ricks is a pull of that.
Probably.
Gotta be, right?
I don't know.
Because, yeah. I mean, it's just so similar over the plate here. But this book is fun and funny, but that's what I thought.
Last one, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Jenica number 3 from IDW by Brom Revel, Rhonda Pattinson, and Jody Nishijima. We read the last issue of this and liked it quite a bit. I think it was a big surprise. It's all focusing on the first female turtle who is teaming up with him. There are two stories in here. The longer story is about her working with a couple of other mutants to try to find a cure. The backup story is a little shorter and a little sweeter, sort of like a what-if type thing. Yeah. Again, I was very surprised. I thought it would be sort of like a one-off thing with the last issue being so good, but this is great. Yeah. I am on board with Jenica.
Yeah, Jenica's really kind of got me back in the TMT world in such a great way. It really makes the turtles a little bit more fresher, and you know, I feel what that guy is going through to try to get the ooze, you know, he's not willing to give up on it, you know, and he's licking it, you know, and there have been times where I thought maybe I should lick some green puddles, but I didn't. I think this is a great
book.
Sounds like
you did.
I'm really impressed with the art and the storytelling. This is a great book.
I agree. I like this a lot. The pickle juice is the real ooze, so definitely check that out. This book reminds me a lot of Hellboy. If you're a Hellboy fan,
interesting.
Both the writing and art feels like early Hellboy, where there's a lot of comedy and a lot of action at the same time. Very fun.
Cool.
Yeah, great stuff. Definitely pick that up. If you'd like to support this podcast and other podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to see you there. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And we'll see you at the virtual comic book shop.
Later. Time for another Ice Cube.